Welcome on into hour number two of the program here. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. A lot going on in terms of the Falcons and where they're at right now, injuries and ineffectiveness. We'll chat with Taryn Walk of AtlantaFalcons.com coming up next. She's live at practice each and every day, so we'll get a boots-on-the-ground report from her, all the information you need to know. We'll also get to a football frenzy at the bottom of the hour. Oren, what's going on with the Dolphins, man?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, that's the problem. But Tyreek Hill's in hot water again, off the field drama. You know what I keep hearing, and we'll get into more of this at the bottom of the hour? A potential reunion in Kansas City.
That may or may not be, sir, in my true false question.
No, how about that? Because we got, how about that for simpatico? Because that is something that's potentially stirring. We got a lot of football news coming up at the bottom of the hour, so you don't want to miss that. But right now, we got not one, not two, not three, not four, but five NFL true and false questions.
The aforementioned Miami Dolphins. Tyreek's having trouble off the field.
By the way.
There were scenes of him on the field on Sunday with some heated arguments, or let's call them discussions, with coaching staff and players.
You want to know a Tyreek Hill stat that's crazy?
What's that?
He has not had a reception of more than 30 yards in over a calendar year.
I believe the last one he had was week one of last year.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You owe me a soda, Jinx.
but no, and Mike McDaniel just seems like a guy who is – that offense, his first year there, seemed like the talk of the NFL. All this speed they have, all this speed. And
they
then
scored 70 points versus the Broncos.
Everything was about speed, and the running backs were so fast, and Tyreek and all this stuff. And then now they're just a team who can't seem to move forward offensively at all and have a defense that
– Tua looked awful in week one.
They who was the Xavier Howard?
Yeah.
Xavier basically said that, you know, you rattle Tua, you get him and his internal clock speeding up, he's not a great quarterback.
Well, you can't blame Tua because he's one hit away from being out of the league.
That's
at this
also
point.
True.
And his whole thing is accuracy and timing.
Accuracy and timing, yeah. He's never going to have the biggest arm. Everything for him is just ball placement, getting that ball out quickly before receivers get in and out of their breaks. And when that timing gets disrupted, bad things are happening, as you can see. My question, though, about the Dolphins, true or false, Tyreek Hill is moved before season's end.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think he's going to go back to Kansas City, honestly. I think he is basically on his last legs in the NFL. I think if he screws up one more time, he's going to be looked at as damaged goods. And
this was a guy who 2 years ago we were talking about potentially having a 2,000-yard receiving season.
And was rated the number one player in the league by his peers. We forget about that. They had that NFL 100 that they do every year. He was number one 3 years ago. And now look where he is. And he's not old by any stretch of the imagination.
Still go out there and be highly effective because he still does one thing very well. Runs very fast.
Well, if you put him back there with Mahomes and Andy Reid and Kelsey and all the protection that they can give him in terms of not speaking to the media and not sticking his nose where it doesn't belong, because he went to the Dolphins, and became the alpha. That's the problem. He's a leader, but I think Tyreek Hill's ego and reputation and winning in the NFL kind of puts him at the top of the pecking order there. But if he goes back to Kansas City, he just falls in line.
Back in place, yeah.
So I think he's going back. I do. Because the Dolphins are going to stink this year. Mm-hmm. They're going to be bad. You know who might actually – they might actually finish below the Jets this year.
Ooh.
How about that?
Yeah.
Justin Fields looked good.
He did look a lot better than Tua, and they scored way more points than the Dolphins did.
6 points?
6 points. That was a 20-something-to-nothing game before Miami got into it and scored. All right, so Russ says mental toughness or mentally tough, I guess in regards to the reports that people are asking about his job now in New York. There was a package of plays for Jackson Dart on Sunday that they had planned for him. And
but the offensive line was so bad.
The offensive line is
that
bad.
They chose not to do it.
Which brings me to my second question here, sir. True or false? We're going to see Jameis Winston start at least one game for the New York Football Giants this season.
Well, it's funny because, in my opinion, though, that's the right move. That offensive line is awful.
It's really bad.
And they don't have Andrew Thomas right now.
He's not practicing because of a foot injury, yeah.
And Evan Neal, the stud out of Alabama, was a healthy scratch.
A bust.
In week one. So that tells you where the state of their offensive line is. I'm not putting him back there to get killed. Why? For what? Draft an offensive – win three games this year. Draft the best offensive tackle in the draft. And then start Dart next year. I don't – they have this at our sister station. It's funny. Their afternoon show producer every day now is wearing a piece of paper stapled to his chest that says start Dart. Because he's so into the idea of starting Dart. But I think, honestly, Arn, the move is you're right. Start Winston. Because – You need somebody back there that can just throw the ball down the field.
Generate something at this point, yeah.
And get the ball to Malik Nabers down the field and just see what they can do. And
you talk about a guy who was not happy on Sunday. Oh, my goodness, Malik Nabers.
Him and Daboll were...
And then there were scenes, too. They talked about the body language. He had towels over his head, just acted like he wanted to be anywhere but on that sideline or on the field with the Giants on Sunday.
Well, his quarterbacks... Daniel Jones, Tommy DeVito, and now Russell Wilson that have thrown him passes. Not exactly.
Not living great.
Drew Lock.
Oh, that's right.
Those,
Drew Lock.
Those were the guys that he's caught passes.
Throw a Drew Lock in there too, yes.
Not good.
Jadeveon Clowney was in Dallas today, interviewing, talking, whatever you wanted to call it. Left Dallas, though, without a deal, and it seems like the Cowboys will not sign him. But Dallas is bringing in pass rushers off the street now because you can't really fill that void of Micah Parsons with, I guess, the current group of players they have right now.
Who's their guy? Demarion Overshown? That's the guy that they have there now?
That guy. True or false, Dallas's leading sacker this season is not yet on their football team.
Oh, that would be embarrassing. For their sake, I'm going to say false. Man, that would be awful. I'm surprised Clowney hasn't found a home because he could just do – you just bring him into like a Von Miller at this point.
Yeah, he'll get five or six maybe on the edge.
Yeah, bring him in on third down.
Von, they talked about, played 40% of the snaps in the Commanders' first football game.
That's surprising, especially against a bad opponent where you don't really need to. But he's got that juice, man. He has since the second he walked into the NFL. Jadeveon Clowney's going to find a home soon. But to answer your question, no, somebody has to do something on that team, right?
Something.
Micah Parsons, by the way, sacking his first game. That defense looks great. I said it at the beginning of the year. They're definitely a playoff team for me, and they might be a Super Bowl contender now.
To just get back right and healthy offensively. Christian Watson, I saw, just got a one-year extension.
They got Golden in the draft.
Yeah, you got a workhorse back in Josh Jacobs. You have everything that you need right now on offense to get it done, and now you've added that over-the-top piece on defense and Micah Parsons. So
you know what I think it is? I think people are still not fully invested in Jordan Love because of what happened with Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
That's my theory on that. Because I think when I say Jordan Love, what's your first thought? Because mine is still Aaron Rodgers.
I think of the playoff win.
Okay, so you've moved past. You've moved.
But that's a high watermark for him, and he hasn't necessarily sort of upped that just yet.
No, but he's had like one or two pretty big statistical years, so it's not like he's not proven at this point, but we'll see. I think they're as live of a contender early on as anybody.
Question number four. We saw it's the first week of the season, but it's going to be hard-pressed to top the excitement of that Bills-Ravens Sunday night football game with the Bills coming back down 15 points with 4 minutes to go, first time in NFL history. Those two teams looks like after week one again, but after week one that they are the class of the AFC. Was that way last year with your two possible MVP contenders, Josh Allen winning it over Lamar Jackson, Lamar being the first-team all-pro quarterback? But true or false, Bills and Ravens, that was a preview of the AFC Championship game at season's end.
False. They're going to do it again. They're going to do it again.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Not just going to get there, but they're going to win it again too?
I don't know about win it, but I think...
Well, there's an addition that you talked about earlier that can help them out. So
yeah.
Let's talk about the Chiefs, by the way, here, guys. Yes.
Don't dethrone them until they're dethroned. Like, that's just how I feel about the run that they're on right now. They have a pattern now. Start slow, turn it on at the end of the year, and then just have Mahomes not get killed in the playoffs. That's sort of been what's happened the last couple of years. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but they always get there. And the way that Baltimore, I read a stat, like, they've had 9 losses in the Lamar Jackson era when they've had a 90% probability to win in the fourth quarter.
That's the Harbaugh effect right there, too. They talked about how bad his record is with double-digit leads in the fourth quarter or something like that. Yeah,
it's unbelievable. So, rock and a hard place. Which one goes first? I'm going to pick the Chiefs.
Final question. Today was announced that not only will George Kittle miss some weeks with the San Francisco 49ers, but Brock Purdy nursing toe and shoulder injuries. The toe being the more serious one, is set to miss multiple weeks at that quarterback position, leaving Mac Jones as the incumbent starter, the backup. Yeah, good old Mac.
Who?
I don't know if I'm the 49ers and Mac Jones inspires that much confidence in the team that, hey, you got McCaffrey out there on Sunday, and he had the most touches in a football game that he's had since joining the 49ers, 31 touches. He looked effective. I don't know how long
he continues. Help me win my fantasy week one.
There you go. I don't know if he continues to get 30-plus touches a game, but he showed that giving him 30 touches, he can hold up. So if that offense feels like they can take that next step, I don't know if Mac Jones is the guy. So true or false, the Niners make a deal to bring in another quarterback from another football team.
Hey, I got a guy. I know a guy. How about number?
I was hoping you'd go that direction.
How about number 18 in your hearts and number 1 in your playbook?
Got a familiarity with that Shanahan system.
I'll drive him to the airport. Sound good?
Yeah.
What would it realistically take? Could you eat $10 million of the deal and give you a fifth round pick?
Mac Jones would have to have a horrible, horrible start on. There'd have to be a start where it would inspire no hope, no confidence whatsoever at the end of it.
Certainly on the table.
He's done that before.
He looked like he could have been on to something in New England. He had that
first year
fake Pro Bowl invite because he was like the ninth alternate.
You know, they won a football game in New England. One day, it was a Thursday night game, I think, when the wind was so bad, Belichick just decided not to pass it at all.
Yeah, I remember that.
They threw it like 3 times, and they won that football game. Because they're like, we can't have him throwing these at. No, he can't
throw.
That's
what Harbaugh did at Michigan, and he won a national championship.
Yeah, take the air out of it.
And now that guy is a star in the making in Minnesota, and Falcons got all
hopefully
they
his star will not be as bright on Sunday.
No. All right, great job on True and False. Coming up next, let's get a boots on the ground report from our buddy Taryn Walk, AtlantaFalcons.com writer. We'll check in with her. What did Raheem Morris have to say today? Michael Penix, and what are the injury and kicking situation updates? All that and more next. Chris Thomas tonight, 92.9 The Game. So many lingering questions after the 23-20 loss in week one with a primetime matchup against a Viking squad on Sunday Night Football that's got to be feeling pretty, pretty good about itself with the way their young quarterback bounced back and led them to a win. So to break all that down and more, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline on Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock, and welcome in one of our favorites, Taryn Walk of AtlantaFalcons.com. Taryn, before we get into the X's and O's breakdown, what can you tell us about injury updates on our two wide receivers, Darnell Mooney and Drake London?
Today, Raheem Morris said that he expects Drake London to play on Sunday solely because it's Drake. He said he's the ultimate tough guy. He did also say that doesn't mean he's going to for sure, but he expects him to. Darnell Mooney, meanwhile, is a little more TBD. He was at practice today, and obviously he practiced last week, but in a limited capacity, and then did not play Sunday. But if he practices all week, I think his odds of playing this week are higher than last week. But again, I think we won't really know until closer to the game when it comes to Mooney.
All right, so when it comes to the game on Sunday, I think the place I want to start with you is up front on the offensive line. What did you see? Obviously, some costly penalties from Elijah Wilkinson, but only 69 total yards on the ground. What did you see, and how do they improve that?
Right. The penalties on Elijah Wilkinson are obviously not ideal, but you do have to give him a little bit of grace. I know people aren't going to want to, but it was his first start in this unit. But when it comes to the unit as a whole, it just was lackluster in general. So it can't all fall on one person. Give credit where credit is due. The Buccaneers defense was really strong and did shut down the run game in general. But yeah, nobody is shying away from the fact that the run game definitely needs to improve. You have two of the best running backs in the league in Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. That what happened on Sunday cannot continue to happen if they want to find success.
Now, one of the positives to take away on offense was, especially once Drake London went out, Kyle Pitts certainly got more involved in the offense. Do you expect to see more of that this week with the wide receivers, even if they do play probably not at 100%?
I don't even know if that we want to say just this week. I think we have to rethink our thoughts about Kyle Pitts in general this year. I don't think that his rookie year is going to be a repeat thing, because it can't be. Think about who's on the offense. Darnell Mooney, Drake London, you have Bijan Robinson, you have Tyler Allgeier. That having a tight end with over 1,000 yards is going to be tough, if not impossible. So when it comes to Kyle, I think we're seeing what the Falcons want out of him in this new addition, this new Kyle, if you want to think of it that way, and kind of let the past over. Now he is going to be used in critical situations or specific roles, and maybe even more so in the future toward the end zone, in the red zone, where he can make those contested catches because he is such an athletic specimen.
You look at Michael Penix Jr.'s spray chart in terms of his passing, a lot of underneath stuff. He wound up throwing the ball 42 times. I would say that's not the ideal game plan. What did you see from him? What did you expect from him now going forward as he enters a primetime matchup?
I thought Michael Penix Jr. did really well. I mean, it was a tough game, and he was put in a tough situation at times, especially since the run game wasn't going. Raheem Morris said, no, you don't go into a game being like, oh, yeah, we want our quarterback to throw it 42 times. But you have to adjust to what the game is presenting you. You can't just keep being stubborn and be like, well, this isn't working. We're going to keep trying until it does. No, they adapted. And Michael kind of thrived under pressure. Like, that fourth quarter with Michael Penix Jr., he showed who he can be. And if you just get everyone else kind of on the same page when it comes to that effort and execution, this offense can be what people want it to be. But that's easier said than done, always.
When do you think the kicking situation, I mean, obviously there's no way to know, but when do you think they'll make a decision?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the fact that Raheem Morris on Monday said they're going to bring in competition on Tuesday. By 4 p.m. on Tuesday, they announced they signed a kicker, Parker Romo, to their practice squad. A veteran, although he has limited experience, he is older with more experience in different ways. That's a lot, that they're taking this very seriously. We, during the media viewing period, don't get to see any kicking, so we didn't get to see, quote-unquote, this battle. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe on Saturday when the practice elevations come up, if they do elevate Parker Romo. But again, does that mean he's going to play? No, I don't think we're going to know that decision until game day, until you see the inactives, until you see who's out there when that first point after attempt comes up or when that first field goal attempt comes up.
Talking all things Falcons with our good buddy Taryn Walk of AtlantaFalcons.com. Make sure you check out her work there for the latest Falcons coverage. Okay, so on the defensive side, Taryn, I'm seeing all this about pressures, and that's good and well, but you only got one sack, and I'm not saying they're not going to have more as the season goes on, but what did you see specifically from the defensive front? My concern was, it looked like more of the same from last year during critical downs. You weren't able – I know he's an elusive quarterback, but you weren't able to stop Baker.
I know. And it's tough because I think it's almost trauma response where, oh, gosh, it's what we saw last year. But I don't think it is, because there was just a completely different energy from this group. You could see them pushing and pushing toward the quarterback. No, they didn't finish the plays as much as they'd like. But at the same time, I looked at all the NFL numbers. And out of every team, out of all teams in week one, 11 only had one sack. And that's the majority when it comes down to it. And I think it's just going to be like once the dominoes start falling, you're going to see them fall a lot.
One positive to take away was the play of Divine Diablo. How impressed were you with him?
Yeah, he was everywhere. I think people talked a lot about Jordan Fuller being a huge free agency signing. People talked a lot about just like the revamping of the defense in general. But I do think that when Divine Diablo came in here, people, I don't want to say overlooked him, but it was kind of like, okay, he's here. Like, we talk a lot about him looking like an avatar, looking at his length, looking at his height. But until we saw it come to fruition on Sunday, it wasn't until then where I was like, oh, snap. This is a guy. This is a guy who can really be an asset for Jeff Ulbrich's defense. And when he's doing that and when he's being used in such a way, it could open a lot of doors for Caden Ellis, too.
I thought the two rookies on the back end played well, particularly Xavier Watts with the almost a couple of interceptions there. Mm-hmm. What did you make of he and Billy Bowman?
Gosh, it was super exciting to see them like have such a good game for their first game ever. Like, just as a human being, that makes you happy. But I will say, Billy Bowman Jr. having the first sack, even if it was half, was not on my bingo board. But good for him. And the same thing with Xavier. Had he gotten an interception, that wasn't on my bingo board. But it just goes to show, like, the Falcons put a lot of thought into their draft class, and they wanted it to be centered around the defense, because you still saw James Pierce Jr. out there. You saw Jalen Walker out there. Yes, Xavier and Billy were kind of like the quote-unquote stars, especially as starters. But in general, there's a return on investment already.
What is the biggest factor / concern for the Falcons going up against Brian Flores and his defense?
Oof. It's getting the run game going, which is going to be really tough against that defense, especially in that environment. I think just the offense in general in that environment is going to be tough, because it's the Vikings' home opener. They're coming off of that major win, and it's J.J. McCarthy's first start at home, too. So it's just like a bunch of these factors coming into play. And I remember last year, that place was crazy loud. So I'm curious to see how the offense does operate under that kind of pressure. Like, Mercedes-Benz was bopping, but that was in support. This is not going to be in support. So I think the keys will be staying composed and executing and not getting flustered, but also getting that run game going, because everyone knows once you get the run game going, it opens up a lot else.
Obviously, the one guy they need to worry about is Justin Jefferson with Jordan Addison not playing. But when it comes to what you saw from Mike Hughes, I know there's a bit of, I'll call it a dialogue back and forth on that second touchdown from Emeka Egbuka, saying that Jesse Bates actually was supposed to be there to help out. So it was actually more of Hughes trying to make up some ground than just giving up an explosive play. What did you make of the two touchdowns from Egbuka and how they recover from that?
Emeka Egbuka is just a draft pick gone really, really well. Like, people were hyping him up, and he showed why. So, again, it's just a good moment for a rookie. You're excited for them being so young and having success, even if it's for the enemy in my mind. But when it comes to this Sunday, I think if it was Jesse Bates, if it was Mike Hughes, like, had a moment now to review the film and see where their holes are, to see where the miscommunication is. And you hope to see that fixed this week in practice. So there isn't that type of moment during Sunday's game against somebody as talented as Justin Jefferson.
TJ Hockenson, we know, can be a matchup nightmare. What do you make of the linebackers, Caden Ellis, we know, Divine Diablo to be athletic, but TJ Hockenson going over the middle, how do you think the Falcons attack that?
That's probably an area I'll want to pay most attention to now that you pointed out, because it'll be interesting to see how Divine Diablo handles it. We've talked so highly about him from last Sunday. Let's see it again in this situation, paired with Caden Ellis, too. So how do they handle it? That's what they're prepping for this week, and I can't wait to see it. I want that playbook to see how those two are handling it, because after what we saw out of Divine, I'm curious how they're going to tweak what Caden's open to do.
Taryn, before I let you go, closing out our convo with Taryn Walk, AtlantaFalcons.com. I don't know if you agree. Flat out, I wasn't in love with the game plan from Zach Robinson, especially short yardage run game scenario. What did you make of his game plan? Do you think it was more dictated by the situation, or does he have some things to clean up?
You know, that's a tough question because I'm not a coach. I don't know what's going on behind the coach's closed doors. But I'm sure after Sunday and some of the decisions that were made, he might rethink it. I know he admitted to as much in today's press conference where he was like, yeah, when it comes to short yardage situations, we're going to have to reevaluate that. So I think that's what they're focusing on this week in those situations specifically. Whether or not it's going to change immediately, I don't know, but I guess we'll just have to wait and find out. So it's definitely been noted, though, by Zach Robinson and his staff.
Taryn, appreciate the time as always. Hopefully we get a dub on Sunday, and next time we chat, we're talking about a lot more positives than negatives.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that is Taryn Walk of AtlantaFalcons.com. Yeah, I just didn't love the game plan, man. I mean, I'm not going to be political about it at all. Didn't love it. Thought there's a lot to work on there, a lot left on the plate, and a lot to be desired. All right, when we get back, a football frenzy. Any team, any topic, any player. And let's get back into your calls. Do you agree with me? Running the ball is the number one thing the Falcons need to fix going into Sunday night, or do you think it's the pass rush, the kicking game, special teams, or something else? Your calls, 404-726-0929. Coming up next. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by one of the best NFL insiders in the biz, Sam Munson from the Check the Mic podcast, going to join us at 8 o'clock. And then a special treat, Raheem Morris, Divine Diablo. They stopped by with Dukes and Bell. You'll hear those chats coming up as well. So an extremely busy 8 o'clock hour coming up. Hey, Orn, are you heading to Saturday's big game in Knoxville? Because you want to make sure to make a pit stop at Twin Peaks in Chattanooga this Friday. Dukes and Bell will be there broadcasting from 2 to 6 p.m., breaking down Saturday's matchup while enjoying the food, drinks, and scenic views at Twin Peaks in Chattanooga. It's an easy stop off I-75 at the state line. That's Dukes and Bell, Friday, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, Orn, I've never been there, but from what I've heard, that is the equivalent of the Taj Mahal's for Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it's pretty massive. Shout out to East Ridge. Old stomping ground up that way.
You used massive purposely?
Hmm?
Did you use the word massive purposely?
Maybe I used the word massive purposely.
All right. Back to more PG football-related content, shall we? You know, that just made me think. We don't dive off the rails that much on this show. We keep it pretty, you know, we keep it pretty tight.
And we're okay, too, because we're close to safe harbor, so we can get away with a lot more than others can say, I guess.
Yeah,
huh?
I'm not, you know.
Might go and try that, though.
No, because you know what, Orin? I made a decision early on in my career.
What's that?
I'm not a shock jock.
Hey.
I'm just not, man. That's just not my shtick. I feel like a nuanced sports conversation is just a lot more fun than, hey, did you know that Twin Peaks is code for boobs? Like, that's just not my style, man. 404-726-0929. You know what needs to be the Falcon style, though? Winning football games. That needs to be a lot closer to their style than their current style, which is losing football games. So with that in mind, let's hear from Coach and a whole lot more in a football frenzy. Speaking of, if you didn't get in earlier, we are taking your calls, 404-726-0929. Do you agree with me that getting the running game on track is the single biggest ticket item for the Falcons to win the game on Sunday? Or do you think it's something else? Pass rush, kicking game, special teams, offensive line, what is it? 404-726-0929. You tell me. Took a bunch of great calls in the first hour. Got a couple more minutes here to take a couple more. But in the meantime, let's hear from Raheem Morris. And he says Michael Penix Jr.'s mindset on the 59-second drive versus Tampa showcased what he is all about.
Man, he is a dog. I didn't even know if he knew. I'm just telling you, like his demeanor and like who he is and like talking to him on game day, that wasn't his question. You know, like I'm sure he cares about his guys, but that was not his mindset. Get open. And like, it is comforting to be around. It really is.
Yeah, and he showcased that obviously, but when Oren, the rest of the team doesn't do their job around you, you lose, and that's why you lost 23-20. I asked this to Taron Walk. I kind of feel like it was just sort of a product of design in the game, meaning it was dictated to you, not you dictating the terms at your opponent. And that was Michael Penix, and he threw 42 times, but a lot of that, a lot of it was dinking and dunking, and Raheem Morris talked about that.
They did a nice job of double teaming over the top, like you're talking about, whether it was Drake or, you know, in yesterday's case, really Drake, right? Yeah. Taking away those shots on Drake, making you force the ball to go other places, and he did, you know, hence the third play of the game. You know, you don't call that play to throw to Bijan. And then Bijan created magic, right? And then the first play of the game, you know, they had a defense out there we didn't want. We spread them out, hit another slant to Bijan. And then as our run game started to kind of not do what we wanted it to do or get enough, we had to get a couple easy completions and do some of those different things for him to get things going. So really the plays down the field were really called in that last drive. I don't know how deep developing the Ray.
Yeah, we're him just taking those shots.
I don't know how deep developing that Ray McLeod throw was, but those are all deep developing plays. A couple went to Ray, a couple went to Kyle, a couple went to Bijan in those situations, and they were playing up at the top. So that situation definitely dictated that, and he made the right decisions on those plays.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to give an explanation for it, it's because you couldn't run the dang ball, so you had to use the short and intermediate passing game as a way to make up for that. But I just thought it got predictable and it got a little – there wasn't enough nuance to it. It was just try to run the ball, fail, and then dink and dunk it down the field. And there really wasn't much – again, I don't want to seem too critical, but I did not think Zach Robinson had a good day, man. I just didn't. And we'll hear from him a little bit later in the show as well because he got a chance to speak to the media. I just didn't like what I saw. I don't know how else to say it, quite frankly. What about Elijah Wilkinson? Raheem Morris says, minus the couple of false starts, he did okay.
Elijah, you know, you felt good about everything except for the false starts, right? You got two false starts that you got to eliminate, and those are things that are going to happen. You don't want them things to happen at home. That's the greatest environment you're going to be playing. And when you get to the road zone, it's going to get tougher. So he'll get better and better as we go. But to go out there and execute and do things that we need to get done, sure, no problem. From a protection standpoint, you felt good because you did drop back 42 times and get sacked once. You got hit a couple more times than you wanted to, but that wasn't all on one person. That was all across the board, how you spread it out and all of those things. But Elijah gives us a chance to win every single game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what else is he supposed to say? No, he was hot garbage and we're going to replace him. I don't think he was hot garbage. Could they run the ball to the right effectively, though? Not really. And, Oren, I think another thing that's not really being talked about a lot, because he's not a household name really, though, Charlie Warner did not play well. He was asked to do some blocking, and I saw him get ramrodded a couple of times, to be completely honest. I did not think Charlie Warner had a great game being an extra blocker and trying to be an assist guy on the offensive line. Listen, I know Tampa Bay's got a lot of beef up there, but you got to be able to do your job. And as Raheem said, all across the offensive line, I just don't think they had a very good day overall. And you're going to have to do that on Sunday night if you're going to win the game. How about Michael Penix Jr.? He was talking about the energy from the home crowd on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, man. It's big time. We need it. We love it, man. Each and every home game, we want it. And we know that they will bring in, obviously, you know, whenever we're making big time plays, you know, the city is going to be behind us, and we appreciate them, you know, for it. And we look forward to being back home again and having that influence that they brought today. So.
Yeah, and that was really, really important that the Benz was rocking and rolling. It's just such a shame you couldn't get the win, right? It just would have set up the week so much differently. All right, one more from Penix. What about his ability to audible and make changes at the line? I thought you saw a lot of that on Sunday, and he looked really good doing it.
I do whatever is in the play call. Whatever coach tell me to do, that's what I do. I don't go outside or whatever that is. We got a game plan set, and coming into the game, we're like, okay, we want to run this play. We get a certain look. We don't like it. We're going to go to the next play. And, you know, I feel like I did a good job with that today, making sure we was running in all the right looks that we wanted to be in.
Now, those are two different things, right? What we're talking about is audibling, like he just said, to the next play in the concept that they're running. We're not talking about Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, just literally ignoring the play or in his headset and just saying, blanket, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. Those are two completely different things. But I thought Michael Penix Jr. looked calm, cool, and collected in the pocket and was able to make the changes at the line that he needed to make. This was interesting. Jake Matthews, one of the team leaders, was voted a captain again this year. He weighed in on the Younghoe Koo situation.
I mean, yeah, I got all the confidence in him. Been with him for a while. Love the way he handles himself and the teammate he is. And, you know, he's a guy who's made huge plays for this organization. So, you know, definitely utmost confidence in him.
I mean, that means a lot coming from the leader of your team, right? He didn't have to answer it that way. It's not like he owes him any favors. So it's going to be interesting. A couple of days here, maybe Friday, Saturday, we'll get an idea of what the kicking situation is going to be. Talk about wasting no time. A couple of teams, though, did something that I thought the Falcons maybe were going to do and chose not to, and that is making cuts after players screw up. The 49ers released their kicker, Jake Moody, and they're bringing in Cairo Santos, Eddie Pinheiro, a vet in the league, and they're going to go with another guy. They saw enough. Jets did the same thing. Xavier Gibson had a huge fumble on a kickoff return, and people were calling for his job in New York, and you know what they did today? Cut him. So there are organizations that will not give you as long of a leash as the Falcons are giving Younghoe Koo right now.
By the way, you know who was almost the kicker here in Atlanta?
Eddie Pinheiro.
Had a choice between Atlanta and San Francisco. Ooh. Who was getting ready to go to Atlanta, and then the Niners called.
Ooh.
So he stayed and went to San Francisco instead.
So he'd rather go to the Niners with their entire offense out than come to Atlanta?
Felt they presented a better opportunity. So I'm hoping we don't look back on that report in a couple weeks and go, oh, not a foreshadow or anything, but yeah, Pinheiro was headed to Atlanta and San Fran called, and that's where he went.
And you know what's going to happen? He's going to be lining up to make a game-winning kick against the Falcons at the end of the season.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, because they play the 49ers. As we mentioned, Tyreek Hill accused of domestic violence. Come on, man. This dude is, you know, it's funny. They say talent is the great deodorizer, and it couldn't be more true in this case. Tyreek Hill has had some serious accusations against him during the length of his NFL career, but because he's so good, if you have the opportunity to have him on your team, teams have just looked the other way, and we'll see what happens with this latest one. It's just horrible to see. You can't be doing these things as one of the faces of the NFL. Steelers signed Jabril Peppers. They had an injury to one of their safeties. Hopefully, Oren, that could help that defense that gave up 6 million points to the Jets last weekend in one of the more shocking results of the weekend.
Yeah, that game hit several overs.
Yeah. Jabril Peppers, good player. I don't know why the Patriots didn't want him anymore, but whatever. I mean, if he still has something in the tank, I think he could certainly help that defense. And before we get out of here, Lamar Jackson did apologize to the fan that he shoved with that whole kerfuffle at the end of the game. Drunk fans, just be better, please. Like, you got one job. Don't mess with the players. Like, I know you're having fun, but these guys, you know, they don't know your intention. They don't know what's going on. They got to protect themselves. I don't even think Lamar needed to apologize, honestly, but good for him for being the better man and taking the higher route. He can go home and count his money while this fan can go spend a night in a drunk tank. That's how I feel about it. All right, 404-726-0929. When we get back, we'll continue the NFL conversation. How does one of the best insiders in the game feel like the Falcons did on Sunday, and how does he feel about Sunday night? We'll talk to Sam Munson coming up next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.